Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoCellaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, September 27th, 2015, and this is show number 542. Well, as it turns out, being retired is awfully hard work, so Steve and I have been forced to take vacations to get away from our hectic life of getting up late, drinking coffee, and fooling around on the internet. Last week, we went wine tasting for a few days, and then up into the mountains, where we got up late, drank coffee, and fooled around on the internet, while looking at and smelling pretty pine trees. I put out a plea for some help with the show, and both Stephen Getz and George from Tulsa came through for me with great reviews. I did a little bit of work for the show, so you'll get to hear from me too, but let's start off with Stephen Getz's review.
Hi, I'm Stephen Getz, and I would like to give you my thoughts on the Brother MFC-L2740DW all-in-one laser printer. But first, the problem to be solved. As part of my job, I get tons of paperwork. Invoices from vendors, work orders, forms, and communications from operations. The HP OfficeJet inkjet printer I had been using has decided to no longer feed paper properly. Off to find a replacement printer. I was pretty sure I wanted a laser printer because the printing I do is mostly text-based reports, meaning it would be much more economical to use a monochrome laser versus inkjet. I also depend a lot on the scanner fax capability to archive documents like invoices, due to the small amount of space I have to store such documents. Space constraints also require that I buy a multifunction printer. The last wrinkle is the printer must support PCL, Printer Command Language, developed by HP in the 1980s to control laser printers. The Linux-based point-of-sale software we use requires PCL to print reports. To make things even more difficult, I could have very little downtime. So I started by looking at what my local Best Buy and Staples had in stock that were in the price range I was willing to pay. Then I had to research whether that particular printer supported PCL. Long story short, I settled on the Brother MFC-L2740DW. It sports print, fax, copy, Ethernet, USB, and Wi-Fi for connectivity, and prints at 32 pages per minute. It also supports duplex scanning and printing, both features I was looking for. So far, I couldn't be happier with this printer. It's fast, quiet, and setup took no time at all. I use this Ethernet port so multiple computers around the business can print and scan from it. One of my favorite features is the 2.7-inch touchscreen display it uses for all functions and settings. On the home screen, there's a handy shortcut button which allows me to store 6 preset jobs. One preset I often use is to copy a multi-page single-sided document into a multi-page duplex document, saving paper and staples. The touchscreen is not the same quality as you would find on an iPhone, and I find myself mispressing buttons often, but it's still miles better than the old-fashioned single-line displays with nondescript arrow and function buttons you would find on older printers. But the one hidden gem of this device is its ability to duplex scan an OCR'd PDF right to OneNote, OneDrive, Dropbox, Google Drive, Box, Facebook, or Flickr. I can now take my 6-page invoice, save a shortcut on the touchscreen UI the printer uses, so with one button press I will scan, OCR, and upload to a specific folder on my OneDrive account. It doesn't use any of my PC for this task, so I can set it to scan and walk away from it. Some of the pros of this printer are its speed, the wide variety of connectivity options, duplex printing and scanning, and the cool apps built into the printer that allow you to scan photos and documents right to the cloud. The only con so far is it only prints black and white, and at $349 Canadian dollars, it's a little pricey, but I think well worth the cost for all the features you get. This has been my review of the Brother MFC-L2740DW. I'm Stephen Getz, and you can check out some of my photography at www.stephengetz.ca. That's www.stevengoetz.ca. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Stephen. That was fantastic. This Brother laser printer sounds really terrific. You know, I did look it up on the Amazon store in the U.S., and it's around $200, and of course, I put in my affiliate link in the show notes. You know, I decided to post Stephen's contribution to podfeet.com as a guest blog post and, you know, of course, spam the universe about it as I do my own posts. In Google+, a bunch of people weighed in with really high marks for Brother printers. I gotta say, I never would have considered Brother before this review. You know, I'm used to talking HP, Canon, Epson, those are the big names. But I will definitely consider Brother in the future. there's a lot of cloud options for your photos these days. If you have an Office 365 subscription for $99 a year, you get a terabyte of storage along with it, so you can throw your photos up there. Dropbox is another good choice. Once you get over the hump of agreeing to pay the $99 for a terabyte for that service, instead of mooching off of the free service forever like I used to. Google wants all your photos too, and while you can store lower resolution photos for free, you'll shell out a wee bit more at $119 for a terabyte there and get full resolution storage on Google services. Apple was always seen as the high-cost alternative because for the same $119 a year as Google, you only got 500 gigabytes of storage instead of a terabyte. In the latest announcement, though, Apple doubled the storage to match Google's cost of a 1 terabyte plan for $9.99 a month, also known as $119 a year. They also dropped the price of the other plan, so 200 gigabytes is only $2.99 a month, which is probably enough for most normal people. I mean, not NoCilla castaways, of course, but, you know, like your brother, your neighbor, your hairdresser, normal people. Heck, your brother can probably figure out and fit into the 50 gigabyte plan for $1 a month. Anyway, I bring this all up because, as you know, I've been a proponent of Apple Photos and iCloud Photo Library since it came out because I just love having access to all of my photos from everywhere on every device. This last week, I had the perfect example of how this makes me so happy. In April of 2011, Steve and I went wine tasting with our good friends Diana Bill up to the San Ynez Valley, and we visited the Fess Parker Winery. You know, the Daniel Boone guy? Well, anyway, we ended up outside with a lovely and somewhat nutty woman named Adriana doing the pouring for us. She was a good sport, and since she was fun, and I'd had some wine, I decided to turn the tables on her and pour her a glass of their wine, the Big Easy. Steve thought it was funny, so he snapped a photo of us, and Adriana made these googly funny eyes at us. We had a blast with her. Now fast forward to this week, when Steve, Devin, Marianne, and I went back to the Fess Parker Winery. We walked in, and Steve noticed that the same woman, Adriana, was there pouring wine again. I grabbed my iPhone, opened photos, ran a search on Fess Parker, and there was the photo of me pouring wine for Adriana. I didn't say a word to her, I just walked up and held the phone up to her. She screamed with delight. I'm not kidding, she screamed. She was supposed to be going off shift soon, but instead decided that we must reenact the photo. We realized that she had on black, just as she did in the photo from 4 years ago, and I happened to have on a red shirt, the same color of the shirt I had on 4 years ago, too. So we were able to take a nearly identical photo down to pouring the same bottle of wine, the Big Easy. Before we had spotted Adriana, the other woman pouring for the tastings had told Marianne that she could not have a Pinot Noir in her tasting list. But after goofing around with Adriana, she bent all the rules for us, and I think Marianne ended up with like three different kinds of Pinot in her tasting. The bottom line is that I continue to be a big proponent of iCloud Photo Library for the fun of pulling up old photos to have more fun. And now the pricing isn't even a penalty. You get all of the photo editing tools and the storage for photos and all your photos on all your devices, and you can store other types of files up there too. So iCloud for the win and Apple Photos for the fun. Now, we also have another great review from George from Tulsa. When I mentioned to Stephen Getz that we had a review from George coming up, his immediate reaction was, "It's been too long." I could not agree more. In his own unique style, here's our review from George from Tulsa.
Google just told me that a hobby is an activity done regularly in one's leisure time for pleasure or a small horse. Years ago, back when I had a film SLR and lots of lenses, flashes, and related gear, photography stopped being mostly fun about the time I was invited to a wedding, asked to bring my camera, then learned on arrival the budget-constrained bride was relying on me instead of a paid professional. That's not a hobby, because it sure wasn't a pleasure. I like taking pictures. My daughter, the art school graduate married to a professional photographer, lured me into buying a camera to shoot RAW, then gave me a brief starter tutorial in how to tweak RAW and edit my photos further in Photoshop. Hey, that's work! And as a reminder of my earlier escape from that rabbit hole, along came an invitation to a family reunion and, oh, yes, please bring your new camera. I continue to take a lot of digital photos, some with my two higher-end cameras, but most with either my cell phone or an HTC RE. That's a RE. The RE has no viewfinder. In appearance, it reminds of an asthma inhaler. There's just a couple of buttons. One's both power and shutter and selects between still and video. The other puts video into slow motion. The RE's trick is an ultra wide-angle lens. It's so wide, I have to remember to hold it away from my body so my feet aren't in the shot. It's so wide, everything in front of the lens is photographed. Use as is or crop. The RE does best in bright sun, though it's difficult to avoid lens flare depending on where the sun is. Even in dim interiors, the sensor captures a lot of image, though post-processing is necessary to bring it out. The little camera works fine standalone. It plugs right into a computer for photo downloads, but its real strength depends on the Android or iOS apps that manage it, its images, and can also function as viewfinder and shutter. I've mounted the RE on a tripod and videoed hummingbirds in flight. In the spring, it snapped some great pictures of incredible landscaping, photos possible only with a very wide-angle lens. By setting the RE on the end of a long table, it's possible to image everyone at the table, including the photographer, who can snap the shutter remotely while seated. Don't like the fisheye effect? The RE app will remove it. The little camera is fun, and funny looking enough, no bride's going to spring a surprise role as a wedding photographer on someone with a RE. Still, the RE is small enough it could be mounted unobtrusively in a sanctuary and video the entire event, up close and personal. Hours and hours on a 64GB card, and unlike some cameras, it'll work when connected to external power. I'd like to also mention Google's free Snapseed application, both iOS and Android. It's my photo editor of choice, easily and non-destructively bringing up dark images, creating highlights, spot editing, changing color quality, filters, the works. My daughter, who after graduating from art school was hired by the university to teach Photoshop, uses Snapseed on her iPhone to quickly turn out results that rival what she can do with Photoshop on her Mac. The HTC RE has been on sale with accessories for as little as $100. Snapseed is free.
Thanks, George. That's a really cute little device. You really do have to see this, you guys. It does look like an inhaler. I put a link, of course, to the HTC RE in Amazon with my Amazon affiliate link if you want a fun little camera for $100. That's really, really cool. Well, I'm going to tell you a story now, and I promise it ends with an actual review of the Manfrotto Compact Action Tripod. But first, my story of why I needed to buy a new tripod. When I got my first SLR camera, the Minolta X700 in 1980, I also bought a tripod. I used that tripod for more than 30 years. Finally, I suggested to Steve one year that perhaps tripod technology had advanced a little bit and that a new tripod would make a lovely Christmas gift. I did a little bit of research and I found a Manfrotto tripod that looked really cool, and I gave the link to Steve. When Christmas came and went and there was no tripod, I went out and bought it for myself. I remember I didn't wait for the holiday cheer to subside, and we went over to Best Buy near Steve's sister's house and where we're celebrating the holidays, and I bought the Manfrotto I'd had my eyes on. Fast forward a year or two, and I slowly started to notice that whenever I wanted to use my tripod, Steve had already anchored his camcorder to it. I never seemed to be quick enough to snag it first before he laid claim to it. So last Christmas, I asked Steve for a replacement tripod. He actually got me one, and it was great, but it wasn't anything like the Manfrotto I'd picked out. It was a good tripod, but I could never get used to how it opened. It sort of folded inside out to itself. Like when you pulled it out of the bag, the legs and the tripod mount were both on the same end. After a minute or two, I would remember how to make it go, but it never quite worked as easily as I wanted. Last week, I decided to buy myself a third tripod. I decided to check out Manfrotto since I liked my original one so much. At first, I was finding tripods costing hundreds of dollars. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't spend a lot on a tripod and get a really, really good one. It's just that I use one maybe four times a year, so it's not really worth it to me to go so high end. I settled on the Manfrotto Compact Action Tripod in red. Here's what I like about it. It's light, weighing in at only 2.5 pounds. It fits that sweet spot between light enough to carry and not so light that it will get easily knocked over. Ask Bart about that problem. This one is made of aluminum and technopolymer. It sounds like a made-up word to me. The payload this camera can hold is 3.3 pounds, which means it's definitely not meant for giant professional cameras, but will easily accommodate a consumer DSLR or a Micro Four Thirds camera pretty easily. Each leg has four clasps to telescope the legs, making it around 18 inches long, and it fits easily into the included bag with a shoulder rope. At full extension, it's 61 inches tall, which is definitely tall enough for me. The thing that sold me on it, both the first and second time I bought it, was the pistol grip for rotating the head. You grab this handle like you would a gun, and there's a thumb wheel that you simply rotate forwards and back to lock and unlock the rotation. It's the fastest method I know to allow you to move the camera around on the end of a ball and really get to rotate it quickly and get it level, and then quickly lock it back in place. I love the pistol grip on this tripod. One big improvement they made from the old model to the new one is the way the camera attaches to the tripod. On the old one, there was a plate that you had to screw into the bottom of the camera with a coin. The plate was almost but not quite square, so I always had trouble getting it aligned correctly to connect it back into the tripod. I'd always be off by 90 degrees. The new Manfrotto has a simple 1/4-20 screw with a knurled knob that you can easily twist into the base of your camera. Then you place the camera onto the tripod by dropping the knob into a circular hole and flip a lever to lock it into place. So much easier. I have to thank listener and friend Jamal for helping me figure out how to rotate the camera into portrait mode, because that baffled me on the photo walk with Trey Ratcliffe. In nearly complete darkness, he noticed that there's a knob on the left side that you rotate 90 degrees, and it allows the entire ball head of the tripod to rotate into the portrait position. It's easy to do, but it would have taken some study for me to figure that out. Finally, the thing I like about it is that it's red. Why is that a good thing? That's so Stephen P. will not steal it from me. And by the way, it was only $70 on Amazon. Bottom line, the Manfrotto Compact Action Tripod in red is inexpensive, light, and easy to use, perfect for my needs. In Chit Chat Across the Pond in a couple of minutes, you're going to hear Bart tell us about a new set of Bluetooth headphones he just purchased. And in our discussion, he mentioned that using iOS 9, you can actually see the battery status of Bluetooth-connected devices under the Today widget. I thought this sounded pretty slick, since I never know when my headphones are going to die. I worked out how to turn this feature on and tested with my $17 Beena headphones, my Apple Watch, and then repeated it on my iPad with the Jawbone Jambox. Now, it's not a super obvious thing to set up, so I decided to make a clarified tutorial on how to do it. I took a half dozen screenshots on my iPhone, then exported them from Photos on my Mac, and dragged them into Clarify. It's easy to reorder steps in Clarify by just dragging them up and down in the left sidebar, so I didn't have to take care in dragging them in the first place. I put some annotations on the images, like an arrow to show that you needed to scroll up to get to something, a box around a button to be pushed, and some text on screen. It's fun to mess around a bit with the colors and transparency and how roundy you like the boxes, too. I noticed something a teeny bit personal on one of the screenshots, so I dropped in a blur rectangle to obscure it. Now for some text to explain what we're doing. I pushed the button to post it as a tutorial on podfeet.com in draft mode, and then went over to see how it looked. There's the best part. I saw a few things I'd missed and some things I wanted to change. So I hopped back over to Clarify, made a few quick edits, and pushed the WordPress button again. Clarify very quickly assesses what's changed and only uploads the changes, and boom, I was done. After that, I hit the Save to Evernote button, and I knew I had my tutorial safely stored both locally and in the cloud, and also accessible from all my devices should I ever need to edit the document. I just love making these tutorials for people. If you want to be a hero too, or just help remember things for yourself, go get yourself a free trial of Clarify from clarify-it.com and be sure to tell them that Allison sent you. Well, it's that time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond, and Bart Bouchatz is back this week. And are we going to have time for anything but security this week, Bart?
A little bit, hopefully, but yeah. So I think I've been giving everyone sort of a running update of how many items are in my RSS feed. And I think last time I was like, oh my God, there was like 60 something. That's ridiculous. Yeah, it was 87.
Maybe we should do Security Light every week.
I guess it wasn't helped that I missed a week. So this is 3. Yeah, because I should have been on when the professor was on.
Oh, right, right, right.
But the weather
was sunny
good.
Out.
Yeah, it was sunny out. And actually, typical irony. So last weekend, it was okay. The sun was out. Today, I spent the whole day inside podcasting and it was 20 degrees Celsius.
Oh. Well, we normally have a rule that if it's sunny in Ireland, we don't podcast that day. That's the law, right?
Yeah, but it's going to be sunny tomorrow as well, so.
Oh, good. Okay.
Assuming the forecast is in any way believable. Actually, speaking of something else that I forgot to put in the show notes, but I'll just throw it in here. For people in the Northern Hemisphere, there is a total lunar eclipse on Sunday into Monday.
Yeah, except for us, it's going to be really short because the moon rises, or the eclipse starts like around 6.
Yeah.
At 7:11 p.m. is when it's in full.
Full, yeah.
But it doesn't rise until 6:56. So we're going to get like 14 minutes
rising.
Of it.
Yeah. So you're going to get it rising. That's kind of cool, though.
It might be neato.
If you can get yourself in a place where you can see that rising over the mountains or something, that would be exceptionally cool photo.
The trick is to get from recording the live podcast to someplace high enough up to see east.
Yeah,
that's pull a problem it off.
For your coast. Yeah, you're on the wrong coast for looking east.
Yeah, it could work, though. We could do something. I hope so.
Well, okay, so it's at like 6 p.m. your time. 3 guesses what that means for me.
6 plus 8, carry the 4.
We're talking starting at 1 in the morning.
Change it to metric. Oh, but it's dark then, at least.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I booked the day off work Monday. It doesn't finish till 5 a.m. my time.
Wow. Okay, cool.
But anyway, assuming the weather continues to behave, I'll be doing that. Anyway.
All right, let's talk about Xcode Ghost, shall we?
Yes, so I figured this one was big enough to pull out into a little section of its own.
Yeah.
So this is the first time there's been a dramatic security issue on the iOS App Store. It's not a catastrophe, but it's also not nothing. So there is there, although thankfully it's not as bad as people had feared. Interesting that the attack wasn't directly at the App Store, because the App Store security is actually quite good. So the attackers went sideways, which I guess, you know, if you want to be successful at being attacking, be sneaky. So the attackers were sneaky. In China, well, okay, everyone who develops for the App Store uses Xcode, because that's how you compile iOS apps. And Xcode is very much the opposite of a small piece of software. It is gigabytes of stuff.
Right, right. 3 gig, I think.
3 gig plus, or 3.5, something like that. It's a substantial piece of kit. And the Great Firewall of China really slows down stuff that's outside of China, which means that for Chinese developers, downloading Xcode is an absolute pain in the you-know-what. Therefore, a whole bunch of Chinese developers decided to save themselves that pain and download a copy from, like, some guy's website.
You can see their motivation.
I see their motivation. However, what they downloaded was not the real Xcode. Well, it was the real Xcode, but the real Xcode with a little addition, a little surprise tacked on. And that surprise injected extra code into every app that was compiled with this booby-trapped version, or, you know, booby-trapped, counterfeited, hijacked, whatever you want to describe it, the tinkered with version of Xcode. It inserted extra code, which did everything your app did, and threw in a little bit of botnet code as well.
So let me ask a quick question right in the middle of this. I heard on the SMR podcast, Rod Simmons said that he read, so I'm double quoting somebody said, and I don't have
friend
the source
friend,
other than that. So maybe this is false, that the way this was discovered was that a developer found that his app was asking for internet access when he had not, there was no reason for it to be doing that. And that confused me, because I thought we knew that when you submit an app to the App Store, you tell the App Store what services this thing is going to request. So it's okay to have it ask for the calendar as long as you tell it, I'm going to ask for the calendar. It's okay to ask for access to your contacts as long as you check the box that says, I will ask for access to the contacts. But if it was asking for internet access and the developer didn't ever check that box, that shouldn't have gone through.
Unless, you see, all right, I haven't stepped through the process, but I think you do almost all of this through Xcode. So if Xcode has been booby-trapped.
Oh, okay. That's kind of what Steve thought when I was asking about it.
Yeah, because this kind of stuff is almost all done with plist files or whatever. So if you create the plist file with Xcode, you know, and it's booby-trapped, they'll just inject, oh yeah, and I also want you know, while it's at it. Just inject that.
Okay. Okay. I got you.
So I think that would explain it. When your compiler is compromised, you really don't know what you're doing anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that is such an important part of the tool set. Like, it's a big deal. Now, the other thing we should say is that I can understand not wanting a really slow download. The bit that gets me is that in order for this to have worked, the developers in question had to have Gatekeeper turned off.
All the way off, or just to the lowest level?
To the lowest level, to the don't annoy me about anything level.
Don't you think a lot of the higher end users do that, probably?
I don't see why anyone would, because...
Well, it's just like the old days, right? You always said it was now just as bad as it used to be before Gatekeeper existed. If you put it on the lowest level,
I would count. Well, the lowest level is just off. So basically, Gatekeeper does nothing, and that's the level this had to be at. Or they had to click past a big warning that said this thing was tampered with. Either or, neither of which are good options. Like, I consider myself a fairly nerdy user, and I keep Gatekeeper at the highest level. Sorry, no, at the middle level, the assigned developers. Mm-hmm. And anytime it pops up a warning, you just right-click on the app and say open. And then you can make an exception for that one app. So you don't turn Gatekeeper off. You just let stuff through the gate one at a time.
Right.
So Gatekeeper will always warn me. So Gatekeeper will pop up and say, so imagine I downloaded Xcode, and I went to run Xcode, which is by Apple, and it said, this signature doesn't match. There's no way you could pay me to run that app.
Okay, but so what you just said, though, was that you actively let apps through one at a time, right?
Right, so it will be a case that they are unsigned. I will never let something through that says it fails a signature. If I download something from someone I trust and it says there is no signature, okay, fine, I'll choose to trust.
Okay.
But I'm never going to accept one that says the signature failed. Like, it is signed.
Oh, do you know that it said that? That it didn't just say it's unsigned? Like,
I don't know that. I don't know that for sure. However, something like Xcode from Apple, I would expect to be signed. Like, it should be a real alarm bell when something from a major corporation isn't signed or doesn't pass the check.
Maybe I misunderstood, but I thought the way the signature thing worked was it was your assigned developer to Apple. So would Apple sign its own stuff?
Mm. Absolutely. Apple issues itself. Yeah, absolutely. All of Apple's stuff is signed. Apple's the first to be signed.
Okay. Well, you know, the problem is you know when you're downloading this that you're not downloading it from the right site. You're that's kind of back when you and I look at a website where we know this is a good piece of software. It might look dodgy. It's not signed. Oh, well, the person should have. But we know who these people are. It's a well-known piece of software. We're going to accept this. We know we're getting something that isn't signed. So maybe they just said, yeah, I know. Yep. That kind of makes sense.
I would expect better from developers. Maybe I'm too. Yeah, okay. Maybe I'm just too.
Aren't you the cutest little thing?
Yeah. But anyway, so it succeeded. There were developers. And so, therefore, as these developers developed and submitted apps, these apps went into the App Store. And depending on who you ask, because it's very hard to get an exact number, the number is somewhere between 40 and 4,000. That's really all I can say. It's somewhere in that rather broad range. The epicenter is very much in China. It's not purely a Chinese issue, but the epicenter is very much in China. So most of the vast majority of the apps are Chinese-only apps. I can't even read the names because they're in kanji.
Like, one of them is Angry Birds.
Yeah, I was going to say there are some exceptions.
From Rovio,
so the exceptions are apps written by Chinese people.
But it could also be that they said it was only the Chinese version, so it might be that there's big apps that they do the Chinese localization by people in China, right? That could be a Chinese version. So it could be a big app, but like I noticed you've got WeTalk. I thought it was WeChat.
It might well be WeChat. I don't use it.
Right, but that is big in China, but I think that one does exist outside of China.
It does, and I don't know if maybe it's only a big outside of China by Chinese people talking to their friends at home. I don't use any of these apps.
Yeah, it is WeChat. Okay, so
I'll have to fix the show notes.
Yeah, I can go ahead and do that. So that's interesting. But what I don't want to do is say, "Oh, it's just China. Who cares?" There's a lot of people in China.
That's not actually, right. It's
Now, you didn't say that, but I think some people are saying, oh, it's not that big a deal. It's just, you know, it's just China. That's a big deal.
There's a learning curve here. So as we expected, Apple, of course, responded to this. Mm-hmm. Actually, before we move on, we should say initially some of the reports suggested that this malware could steal iCloud credentials and so forth. That appears to be untrue.
Good.
Apple have an FAQ saying what it does, and a different company that's nothing to do with Apple independently verified. So AppAuthority studied it too, and they agree with Apple that actually this is it's not good, but it's very benign. It isn't stealing sensitive stuff.
So I hate to keep backing you up, but I've been dying to talk to you all week about this, so I want to get every bit out as I can. Why is there a question of how many apps are affected from 40 to 4,000? Why is that not a defined number? Why is there so much variability? Do you know?
Well, I guess in order to be sure, someone would have to download every app in the App Store and run it through a scanner, and that doesn't seem like it's something plausible for anyone to download every app from every app store in every country.
But I thought Apple had scanned and said how many. No?
Does Apple's FAQ give an exact number?
That's a good question.
Actually, you can also tell from Apple's FAQ where Apple think the epicenter is, because you got to scroll for the English.
Oh. Yeah, well, I thought they were going to... They said they were actually going to list the apps. And if it's 4,000...
1, 2, 3, 4. So they're 5 across. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 by 5, according to Apple. So that'd be 25. That doesn't seem right either. Because I know other companies found 75 apps. So I don't know is the honest answer is I don't know. And I'm not sure if anyone has a definitive answer. And the Apple FAQ certainly doesn't say it was 427 or something sensible like that.
Yeah, there is, it is only 5 by 5.
We have removed the apps from the App Store.
So they believe they've removed them all. Yeah. One of the SMR podcast guys said it was FireEye, which is supposed to be a pretty well-known authoritative source on this kind of stuff. They said 4,000.
Yeah. Yeah, so look, yeah, FireEye are generally a reliable source on these things. So let's go with FireEye. Either way, now that it's known, it's no problem for Apple to scan their own systems for this stuff and take appropriate action. So I guess we just have to assume that Apple did their homework.
When I was on Tech News Tonight with Megan Maroney, and I made the point that you've been making for a long time. Okay, Apple people, don't be snarky about security and act like it can't happen here. Okay?
I've been saying it for about 5 years now.
I think so.
And for most of those 5 years, we could have gotten away with being snarky if we wanted to, but I never thought that was a good idea, because that'll just get you looking stupid.
Right. Personally, I was snarky a lot later than you. I didn't stop nearly as soon. Well, I didn't completely stop either. But okay, let's be honest.
No, I mean, there are differences, but it's Apple stuff is not made of unicorn tears. Just because
it is.
Better.
Shut up, Bart. Is so.
So, okay, so Apple have taken down the affected apps. Apple have added extra scanning stuff on the back end, no doubt, to scan for this stuff. Apple have also sent a little bit of education towards the Chinese developers, reminding them how to check if their version is valid. And to make life easier going forward, they are providing an official Apple mirror inside China.
You know, that's the best. Something they should have thought of earlier, right? That's the root cause, right? Just take a bait. Because people, all this education crap, they're not going to stop doing it. Not for a minute. Not until you make it easier for them to do it right. You've always got to go back to when you have... I did this a lot with employees and people inside our company to try to get them to do the right thing. You got to make it the easier way than the hard way. You know,
yes,
hard
absolutely.
Way, they're never going to do it. No matter how much they know it's the wrong way, they're still going to do it the easy way.
Yeah. So, you know, all in all, what I like about this is that Apple decided to respond. Oh, yeah, it's also been added into XProtect. So Max will detect this fraudulent. So XProtect has been in OS X for a couple of versions now. It's Apple. They keep it very quiet, but OS X actually has a malware scanner built in.
Okay, so this did not happen in the Mac App Store, though. In fact, why didn't it? Why was it only the iOS store?
Okay, an antivirus scanner cannot detect viruses that are not known. So as soon as the virus is discovered, it's very easy to add its signature into scanners. Until it's discovered, the scanners will not find it.
Yeah,
so Apple are definitely...
No, I'm saying, why did this Xcode Ghost problem only happen on iOS? Do you only use Xcode for iOS? You don't use it for Mac apps?
You do. In this case, the attackers chose to attack iOS. They could have.
Okay, they could have, though.
But, yes, okay, absolutely.
Okay,
yes,
got you.
But the thing is, iOS is so much of a bigger target because there are so many more iPhones in this world than there are Macs in this world.
Right, right.
And that's doubly true in the in China, and in most of the world there are in all of the world there are way more mobile devices than there are computers everywhere. That's everywhere.
Okay.
That's just the way.
Are we allowed to go make fun of Microsoft or Android yet?
we'll get to do that. Don't worry. There's plenty of that in the show. So let's move into the regular old stuff. So Security Light updates. Since we last spoke, Patch Tuesday has been and gone. Microsoft patched Windows IE and Edge. They also patched Office for Mac. Adobe
2011.
Squished... Yeah, I think that's the latest view. 2016 is out soon. I'm looking forward to that. Or maybe it's out already.
I think it's out. No? Yes. I think so.
If not, yes, then very, very, very soon. And if it is out, very, very recently. Adobe squished 23 bugs in Flash. You should probably... take care of that. Related story, Brian Krebs is warning people, if you still have the old Adobe Shockwave installed,
then you haven't been listening to this show.
That is also true. You really need to get it off because it's Shockwave. So you have Flash and you have Shockwave Flash, and Shockwave Flash contains another version of Flash inside it. And the version of Flash embedded in even the most recent version of Shockwave is a few months behind real Flash. Yeah. So that means it's riddled with security vulnerabilities.
Yikes.
So even if you're fully up to date on Shockwave, you're shockingly insecure. So
puns intended, Bart.
Oh, totally. It's just, I think I'm sort of punning. I think Brian Krebs titled his article Adobe Flash Patch Plus Shockwave Shocker.
Nice.
So yeah, it's just got to go. It's so old, so outdated. It's legacy. Make it go away. Firefox 41 is out with critical security bugs that may allow remote code execution, so that's never good.
By the way, the only time I launch Firefox is every 2 weeks when I'm on the show with you and you tell me there's an update.
There is nothing beats tree-style tabs.
Yeah, I do like them tree-style tabs.
Yeah, so that's my main browser of choice. Anyway, we all know that iOS 9 is out with all the fun stuff, but iOS 9 also contains 101 security fixes. So.
I feel so bad. I need to talk to my friend in person about this, but one of my friends sent me an email or a text message while I was off on vacation and said, hey, iOS 9 is out. Should I update on my phone? My husband says there's been problems. And I said, I don't know any big problems. There's no showstoppers. You should always update. Hit update. And her phone completely died. Now, I thought, okay, no, it's not really dead. I need to go help her kind of thing. And she took it to the Apple store, and it was dead. It was 100% dead. Now, I'm assuming this was just a coincidence, but it was dead, dead, dead. And they had no replacement phones for her, even though they were selling them right next to her. They wouldn't give her a replacement phone, told her she had to go to a different Apple store to go get it, which she did.
It's probably just the case that thing was on its last legs, and asking it to do something as big as an update. I was like, too much.
Yeah, I guess. But I felt so bad. I was like, I told her nothing could go wrong, and it bricked her phone.
It's still
heard
right
of anything
advice.
Like that, right? I mean,
no. Okay. It's been
pretty good.
Been solid, yeah.
Okay.
Unlike this time last year, people can still make phone calls.
Yeah, 8.0.1. Oh, yeah, 9.0.1 is out. Your show notes are later ready.
Yes, it is out, and it's a small little update. I did it this morning.
Good.
Apple Watch 2, similarly, nice shiny features, also a security update.
Yeah, no, I was confused. It's got the same thing in it that the iPhones have, where if somebody steals it from you, they can't authenticate it?
Well, that's Apple Watch 2 adds activation lock, yeah.
Yeah, what does that mean?
It means that your Apple ID, you need to have your Apple ID password for that watch to change Apple IDs. So it, like a stolen phone, can't be reactivated on someone else's Apple ID without your password first. The watch is basically locked to you.
I thought you had to decouple the phone from the watch to move it to another phone anyway.
Right, but you could until this update came out, you could take my watch off my wrist when I wasn't looking. I don't know quite how you would, but let's imagine you did. Mm-hmm. And you could then say factory reset that watch and attach it to your phone.
How would you factory reset the watch without the phone?
You would use your phone.
So maybe I'd have to steal your phone and your watch.
No. You definitely could. You could get to a stage. You could, yeah.
Like pressing the home and whatever buttons is the same thing.
All of the data on the watch would be lost. So yeah. There's no way you could get my stuff.
Okay.
But you could say to the, your phone could tell my watch to start over, delete everything on you and become mine. But you could never steal my data.
Okay.
Which I thought was already pretty darn good. Now you can't even do that. So it's a nice update. It makes the Apple Watch less tempting for naughty thieves. So
that's
assuming they know that you can't. So I guess we have to educate the thieves.
Yeah, so they stop trying. That's good.
Yes. And then finally, iTunes 12.3 fixes a batter o' bugs, but it also adds two-factor auth for people who have Apple IDs with two-factor auth.
Okay.
So that is the important updates. Then we have security news. First one is spectacularly annoying. Some idiot thought it would be fine to allow a photograph of a TSA master key to go on the to go on a news article. Shock horror, a day later there were 3D printed working copies of the TSA master key. So basically every single TSA approved lock is now useless.
Oh my gosh. But a journalist posted it? Or I used journalist.
It was part of a news story. Quotes. Yeah, it was a news story about how cool the TSA is, basically.
Mm.
Yeah, it did not go. That's stupid, stupid, stupid. There is a bug in AirDrop, which means that if you have AirDrop enabled and you are sharing with people who are not your friends, or if you have really bad friends, one of the two, that people who are not you can silently sneak software onto your iOS device, which is not a good idea.
Yeah, I didn't understand the reason that people were leaving that to allow anybody anyway. I mean, that just seemed like it would be a bad idea, but... And
yeah,
plus, it's not like it works ever when you need it. I have found AirDrop to be really unhelpful. Like, when it works, it's amazing, almost 20% of the time.
Well, I was going to say, whenever I test it, it works fine. Whenever I want to use it for real, no.
Well, and it's always bizarre. I think I've told this story before, but on the ship in India, we would try to move photos between phones. We had no internet, and it'd be like I could see Wally. Wally could see Raleigh. Raleigh could see Don. Don could see me, but the exact opposite circle couldn't happen. You know, and then Steve was seeing everybody.
Yeah.
It was completely random.
It needs more work, big time. But anyway, for now, if you have it on and open, either turn it off or lock it down. One of the two.
Yeah.
This bug also exists in OS X, this vulnerability exists in OS X, although I'm not aware of anyone actually doing anything with it or what it could do on OS X, but the problem is in the software, so maybe someone could develop an attack. iOS 9 mitigates against this problem.
Oh.
But it doesn't fully fix the underlying flaw. It just makes it harder to exploit. And apparently Yosemite will do the same for OS X, but we're expecting there to be a real fix later.
Just in case we weren't clear, because I sort of interrupted Bart when he was saying it, is just set AirDrop in your control center to be contacts only.
Right? Correct.
That's all you got to do.
Yeah. And that's kind of a good idea, just plain old anyway. There is yet another lock screen bypass. It's only a partial one, so it's contacts and photos that people can access. The solution is to turn off Siri on your lock screen for now. I kind of have Siri off on my lock screen all the time because I don't. Letting Siri out without having to authenticate, it just seems like too much of a risk to me, so I've never done it. And that pretty much gets rid of all. I've never had any of the lock screen bypasses affect me because I keep my lock screen locked.
Hmm. My problem is I'm going for a walk and I want to dictate something.
Yeah, it's your watch is for.
I want to call somebody. I can't do it from the watch.
See previous comment? Yes, you can.
I won't be able to. So I'm on my walk. I've got my iPhone in my spy belt. I got my headphones on. If I do it from my watch, the phone call goes to my watch. I don't want to talk to them on my watch. I got headphones in. I'd have to turn off the headphones, take them off, and talk to my wrist instead of using the headphones I have on.
True, true. Or, well, I guess for incoming calls, you can answer them, even with everything off on the lock screen.
Yeah.
So I guess if you're making calls, yeah.
Which yeah.
I guess I don't do
I don't know. Half the time she won't do what I tell her to do anyway. I don't know why. If it's that way.
I'm really surprised at how good Siri has become. I tried Siri a few years ago and then haven't bothered since. But now with the watch, I use Siri a lot. And she's surprisingly helpful.
No. Never.
Okay.
This is how I call Pat Dengler. Call Pat Dengler mobile. Would you like to call, or no, I don't have a mobile number for Pat Dengler. Would you like, and it'll say the phone number that I want, which is the only phone number I have. I said, yes. And it says, which number would you like to use? So I have to pull out my phone and tap it with my finger. It happens every single time. Actually, another thing I got to try is whether they finally figured out, I've complained about this one before too, but in my contacts, I have told my phone that Lindsay Tondi is my daughter. I've told it that Kyle Sheridan is my son. If I say, call my daughter, it says, which one of your children would you like to call? So even though it recognized that the word daughter means child, daughter doesn't mean daughter.
I'm someone getting too hyper PC somewhere. We must remove gender distinction.
Maybe. I don't know. I should try it. I have not tried that on the new Siri. We'll see. I'm sure I'll hate it. Okay, keep going.
Anyway, so there is a partial lock screen bypass on iOS. Disable Siri, problem goes away. Android users also have a lock screen bypass, but their one is a bit more bypassy. Their one gets full access to the phone. So it's on Android 5, which is the somewhat of a good thing because not a lot of people are on Android 5 yet. And there is a patch, which Google have released. The problem is it's now in that little limbo land where people who have a Nexus have it and everyone else is waiting on their bloody carriers and their manufacturers to pass on the goodness.
Okay.
Google's Project Zero has found what they call easily exploitable bugs in Kaspersky AV, which they say is part of a bigger problem, where installing AV may actually make your computer less secure.
What?
And the reason for... Right. Think about this logically. AV has to have very deep system
AV
access.
AV is antivirus for those who aren't catching what he's saying.
Oh, yeah. I should have said that. So antivirus software has to get its tendrils into the deepest parts of your OS. So it is running very high privilege, like the highest privilege, basically.
Sure.
High privilege code, if it has a bug, means a complete takeover of the machine. So it's very dangerous. So in theory, high privilege code should be small, compact, and as efficient as possible. So there's the least possibility of a bug. How many AV products do you know that are small? Because marketing wants them to do everything. And so the end result is that you have large, bloated software running at the highest privilege level on your system. That's a recipe for disaster.
Because there's more code, more bugs.
Correct. More features, the more complex, the bigger, the more bugs.
So this isn't a problem with Kaspersky. It's a problem AV?
Yeah, Kaspersky is a symptom of a larger problem that marketing wants to make AV do 20 billion things. Ooh, did you drop your mic?
No, just smacked it. Sorry about that.
Ouch. Anyway.
This could be true of ClamX AV. It could be true of any of them, right?
Clam is probably the worst example to pick because Clam, it's commercial now, but it's not commercial in the same way as the other ones. Clam has actually stayed relatively simple because Clam is basically a Linux AV, and it's basically its core is open source. So it's less affected by this, we must add more features or we can't sell our product mentality. So of all of them, Clam is probably the least bad. But yeah, your Nortons, your McAfees, all the big ones, they're all the same. They all want to add 20 kabillion features because that way they can make a checklist look better.
So the answer for if we were in Security Light, which we're not, would be find something that does very little.
If you're going to run AV, run a small one with fewer features. Less features is more.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. That's basically it. So it's annoying, but there we go. The set of related Android bugs, collectively known as stage fright, has made the news again. The security researchers have now released the proof of concept code, which means that anyone can now have a go. at attacking it. Rather disturbing related news, Google's Project Zero has shown, by demonstration, that address space layout randomization on Android is not very effective at protecting users from stage fright. This is in direct contrast to Google's PR department, who are going around going, ASLR, problem solved, nothing to see here. So, unfortunately, now, thankfully, according to Leo, which I say with trepidation, but according to Leo, a lot of updates are starting to appear for an awful lot of users. So that is good. So in the 3 weeks since we last talked about this, the vendors and the carriers have managed to get updates out to an awful lot of people. So that at least is something.
Now, are they back to older versions of the OS? Of Android?
Yeah, see, that I don't know. So Leo has like a handful of fairly modern Androids and they've all got the update.
Right. But
yeah. No, okay. Yeah. Model's still broken. And then last thing I have in here is more shenanigans from Microsoft. This makes me cranky because they didn't used to be like this. They're now becoming googly. So if you're a Windows 7 user or a Windows 8 user and you did not ask it to, you did not reserve a copy of Windows 10, you have no intention of moving, you're happy where you are, you never said yes, you never in any way asked, there is a high probability that you have Windows 10 on your machine because in the background, Microsoft have been using software update to download between 3.5 and 6 gigabytes of junk and sticking it in a hidden folder. Jeez. This has been chewing through people's data caps.
I was going to say.
Yeah, because you might say, well, 6 gigs in a modern hard drive is nothing, but 6 gigs in a modern data plan can be a real problem.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And this notion that it's okay to do that, it's like that, I'm sorry, but you people's view of reality is just gone.
I can see offering it, but
yeah,
it's sort of like, I know Steve Jobs used to speak as though everybody had Wi-Fi everywhere, even though most people don't have Wi-Fi everywhere even now. It's sort of like they think that they must all have homes where they have no data caps. I mean, I don't happen to have one, but Alistair Jenks does. I mean, I know people in civilized countries with serious data caps.
And Windows is ubiquitous everywhere. Windows isn't only in first world countries.
Yeah, you would think, well, and I would call New Zealand a first world country, too.
Absolutely, right? Yes, just in case anyone is...
I believe Canada fits that bill, too. That is just irresponsible. I don't know.
Yeah, so this is on top of the fact that they were doing peer-to-peer networking, stealing your bandwidth earlier as well. Like, this whole going free, it's seeming to be quite expensive. And in this case, it's hitting people who don't want anything to do with Windows 10. They're happy where they are, and they're still being... Yeah, I don't like it. I think it's ick. I think it's a... I think it fails Wheaton's law.
Yeah.
Anyway. Important security news. Why is there only one thing in important security news? Did I put everything in suggested reading?
Maybe.
Or, no, wait a second. No, I have two sections called security news. Could you merge the last story in above the Windows one?
Wait. Yes. Okay, gotcha.
So GCHQ, which is the UK's version of the CIA, the Government Communications Headquarters, I think, they thought it would be a good idea to try to track everyone on the internet everywhere. And so they have a giant data center, they call it the black hole, and they were trying to do that. And we now know about this thanks to more leaks from, I think it was Snowden again. My editorial comment on this is why we need HTTPS. That just puts an end to all of this kind of shenanigans.
Really? Just encrypt that would fix stuff. It?
Yeah.
Oh.
But yeah, because they're going around, they're just like, everything you're doing is not HTTPS. You can just take the cookies and archive it, and you can just follow everyone around the internet. So as soon as you make it HTTPS, they then have to break all of that encryption before they can do it, which makes it infeasible to track everyone.
Okay.
You can hoover up encrypted data in a useful way.
I don't want to talk about the next story.
I'm sorry, Alison, but we're afraid we have to. OPM has gone from... it was well beyond bad anyway, but whatever
Office
it was.
Of Personnel Management.
So this is a branch of the US government that's basically the HR department for just about everyone who has contact with the government. We knew they had lost about 1 million fingerprints. Well, it turns out they lost 5 times more than that. So it's, I think, 5.6 million-ish.
My fingerprints are in there. So are Steve's.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're in the 5 million.
I think, were you not in, the, were you not, did you not already know you were in the first batch?
We would have, well, we don't know. We don't know for sure. And it, this is a really appalling thing. How long has this been open? We have not been contacted yet. And when Steve keeps calling them and they say, yeah, you know, like we're hiring somebody to maybe check into this because it seems like it's probably a big problem for you. Maybe we're going to help you. You know, they said they were going to do 3 years of security check or, you know, check on your credit check. That's what I'm trying to say. And No, there's no communication. They haven't. They've just hired somebody to think about fixing to make a plan to maybe do that.
That doesn't I mean, the nature of how the breach happened instills no faith, but the response instills even less.
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't be surprised. I worked for a large governmental company that would be equally as slow to do something like this. I mean, it's the government, right? Of course it's going to take forever.
Yeah, yeah.
In other news,
In
other news, someone bought $16,000 worth of farm equipment in Texas on my credit card this last week. So, what the heck?
Yeah. However, there is some slight tiny wisp of good news sort of related. Tiny. It's a very small lining. But the Department of Homeland Security's chief information security officer said at a conference that he feels that if you fail a basic test of phishing, you should lose your clearance. That way people can actually take this stuff seriously.
You mean, so you got a bunch of candidate employees in a room or existing employees in a room and you send them all a phishing attack and those that click the link get their clearance revoked?
Basically, you try fish them. If they respond, they lose their clearance. They have to go on an education course and then they can reapply.
Yeah, that's not going to work because 80% of the people are going to click it.
Well, that'll happen once. And then you could maybe offer an amnesty and say, okay, this time, but you're off through the education course.
Yeah.
You won't lose your clearance, but go get educated. And the next time, you're going to lose your clearance. And if you lose your clearance...
I could see doing the education if you got caught. And you'd know that that's why.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought it was good to hear someone with such a big title saying sensible stuff. It's rare. Whether it'll happen again, I guess that's probably the next problem. Another follow-up is Ashley Madison. Yeah. So we said last time that they had done a great job of securing their passwords because they were using bcrypt and they had done everything right, and that is true. They had also done everything wrong. So they had these really strong hashes and they have not been broken. But on a significant chunk, about a third of their accounts, they had a legacy field in the database called a security token.
Okay.
Which no one's quite sure why they had this field. It's probably something they used to do and they realized it was a really stupid idea and they stopped doing it. So there's no new accounts don't have this field. But they never cleaned out their database. And this token is generated with MD5, which is ancient and utterly insecure.
Oh, interesting.
So that means that there's now 11 million Ashley Madison passwords hacked. Because if you have an open door next to the secured door, they still get in. Suggested reading is chock full of stuff. I will leave it to... Yeah, I'll leave it to people to read. The only thing in there we may want to talk about is Volkswagen and their shenanigans. I don't know if we want to talk about that.
We kind of did already. I do like the first story. Let me just read your headline. A leaked report shows that the Obama administration considered four different options for bypassing crypto, but found problems with all of them. So they looked at it and said, well, that'd be stupid. So,
which is great.
Yeah, you kind of like to hear that. You know, that's kind of a good way to go.
It does also explain why there doesn't seem to be a push anymore for this stuff coming from the White House. There was a couple of months back, and now it's dried up. And I think this explains why they've stopped pushing on that door.
Yeah,
because they looked at it, and their own experts went, "Don't do that."
I do want you to explain the VW story just so that I can say what Rob Dunwood said on the SMR podcast about it because it was hilarious.
Yeah, so Volkswagen pride themselves on having diesel cars which manage to do magic, being both powerful and clean. And they do this by cheating. So the car detects when it's being tested for emissions, and if it's being tested for emissions, it turns the power right down, and so you get a nice clean tailpipe. And all the rest of the time, you get a really dirty tailpipe, but nice power.
Now, it's not just a little bit dirty. It's 40 times what would pass an emissions test.
4,000%.
So what Rob Dunwood was trying to help people understand what 40 times means. He says, okay, let's say you sign up for a dating site and you see this person on the dating site and you decide, I want to go out with them. And it says how tall they are. And when you go to pick them up, they're 40 times taller than they were online.
Yeah, 6 times 40 is 240. So 240 foot. What's 240 foot? That's a skyscraper.
I just loved it. Yeah, this is crazy huge. It turns out it's a hardware fix in order to fix this problem. I don't know how they're going to, I mean, this is unfathomable.
I think they're going to pay vast wadges of cash and leave the cars as they are.
But those cars can't legally be on the road.
Oh, so, actually, in California, you guys have really strict emissions rules. So those cars have kind of become illegal in California.
Well, I don't think it's just California. I think it's at least the entire United States. And I heard that even China has much harsher restrictions than this would allow. And so you're going to go in for your test. They're going to look at the car and say, yeah, that's a VW. No, you didn't pass. Go get your car fixed.
Yeah, we don't believe you. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever you say, it's a lie. Yeah. Yeah, so this is going to be insanely expensive, and the CEO already quit.
Good.
Resigned. Yeah.
I saw the day before he resigned, he did a press thing in New York where he was releasing a new car or something, and he was like, "Yeah, I did my best German words. We screwed up." I was like, "No, that's not good enough, mate."
Wow, we just had the funniest Skype failure. You sounded like a baby for just a split second there. I've never heard it do that one before. You got really high pitched like this. That was fun. Well, maybe that's our hint to move on to. You have a lot of notes about your. You're going to try to talk me into a product here, right?
Well, it's more of a problem to be solved than you might agree with me along the way. So,
okay,
my preferred form of exercise is cycling, and I like in order to get decent good exercise with cycling, you tend to have to go a long way. So I might be gone for an hour or two, and I get bored easily. So I like to listen to podcasts because, hey, got to listen sometime. And I have spent a long time trying to find a solution that works. And most of the time I've failed. So initially, I thought I had it solved. So I had my headphones I really liked that I recommended to you and that you really liked. And I would stick my iPhone into the back pocket of the cycle jersey, run the headphone cable through the jersey, up at the bottom and round into the pocket on the back. And that way there was no cable in the way, I could hear what I was doing, and that sort of worked until I realized that if I got sweaty, my phone got wet. And wet phones is not a good idea. Fine, okay, armband. So first armband I got, I put it on. 2 minutes after I left the house, it was all around my elbow. Like, just 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, fine, put it on tighter. Oh, I have no blood flow, but my armband is staying up. Hang on.
Now, do you put this outside your sleeve or under your sleeve?
Outside, because I want to be able to reach the controls.
Right.
Because I didn't have an Apple Watch yet, so I needed to be able to reach the controls. Okay. So, and it's in the back pocket, you could reach around, pick it up, change podcast, and put it back. So armband, I need to be able to reach it. But then, of course, what do you do with the cable? You now have a cable going to your arm, so feed it under the armband, it sort of dangles around. I basically broke, I think in the space of a month, 2 headphones. Yeah, which made me, I think I was buying them for about €40 a pop. I was like, this is not a good idea. This is not a good fix. So after a lot of faffing around, I have actually got, the other thing is the crappy armband that slid down my arm after 5 minutes, or I had to pull so tight it was bloody well sore, also wasn't waterproof. And I had a very near miss where I almost lost an iPhone. Yeah. So then I realized that not only am I losing $40 headphones, I'm now at risk of losing multi-hundred-dollar phones. So I was like, this is not a good idea. This is not working.
Yeah.
So I threw it all away and I've replaced it with, well, I guess the watch is helping too, because it now means I have a remote control, so I don't have to actually touch my phone. Mm-hmm. But I've replaced it with a new armband, which actually works because the whole thing is polka dotted with rubber. Like when you look at the back of it.
So a lot of friction, huh?
Yeah. And so I don't have to put it on tight and it stays where I bloody well put it. It's also waterproof. So I stick the phone in, it's waterproof, I stick it around my arm, it just stays there.
So you can touch it, so the controls, it's got plastic over it, but the controls still work?
Yeah, it has plastic over the front, but the controls still work. I have gotten very, very rained on, the phone stayed dry.
Very nice. Rained. Now, you're going to need a new one when you get that iPhone 6, right?
I am. Thankfully, this company make lots and lots of different shapes. So it's iGadgets, I-G-A-D-G-I-T-Z. And they have one, like, you put in iGadgets, anti-slip, neoprene, and they'll have one for, like, every Android and every iPhone, and they have lots of them. And this, my one cost me the whopping sum of £7.99 from Amazon.co.uk.
Yeah, that's kind of nice.
So I presume you'll find an American link and stick it in with your affiliate link.
What? I might do that. Yeah, $11.99 US.
That's about the same.
That is interesting. Now, I've been a huge proponent of the Spy Belt, and Rod Simmons turned me onto that because his wife uses it for marathons, and it's a flexible little pouch on a waistband. So you stick it around your waist, You can put it on your stomach, around on your back. I can jog with it, doesn't move, doesn't bounce, holds it nice and flat to me, works great. Why would you not use something like that?
When bent over cycling, I don't like having things around my waist.
You wouldn't even notice it. It's so flat to it. It's not. It doesn't poke into you at all. It's just perfectly flat, and it's protected by your body over leaning over, I would think, from the rain. Not as protected as being in a waterproof case, I'll give you that.
Yeah, the armband, it's just nice, actually, to be able to reach down and change podcasts and stuff easily.
Yeah, you do have to take it out. I'll give you that. You don't. If you really need to be able to change things, that's not going to work for you. You got to take it all the way out.
I can't change things while cycling, so I'll stop, because otherwise I'll crash. Like, that would be really, really irresponsible. I will stop and just, you know, tap on the arm and then take off again. But it is, I do find it handy to be able to see the screen and to be able to interact with it without taking it off.
Yeah, I could see that. I give you, so Bart and I had a bet whether he could talk me into thinking this was a good thing. And I told him there was zero chance I would ever think this was a good idea. And then he asked for 1% chance. And I said, all right, I'll give you that. It's a lot better than I thought. The idea of the friction thing is pretty big. That's interesting. But the last time I wore an armband was with an iPod Nano and it fell down my arm. So it's like, these are bad. These are stupid.
I think it's having any material that isn't grippy is going to slide down. And I think that the little rubber nodules is just the genius bit here, because you don't have to tighten it so it's a bloody tourniquet instead of an armband.
Now, do you run the headphones up your sleeve?
I don't run the headphones anywhere.
Because you use Bluetooth.
It's get rid of headphones. Yeah. So that was the first thing. And that didn't cost a lot of money. £7.99, not a lot of money. The second problem was the bloody headphones I kept breaking. And a friend of mine in the UK put me on to a UK company called Damson or something along those lines. And they do bone conduction headphones, which means that they don't go over your ear. They go onto your cheekbone and they transmit the sound through your cheekbone into your ear. And so it sounds normal, but there's nothing covering your ear. So in terms of jogging or cycling or any sort of outdoor activity, that in itself is a feature that had my eye straight away because it is just safer. So... Yeah. That immediately caught my eye. Then they're Bluetooth, which means no more cable, which means I can't snag anything. So I'm less likely to destroy these as quickly. Less likely. I'm sure I'll manage, but they're also more expensive. So that's why I really hope I don't manage.
Ooh, $150 US.
Yeah, I was going to say they're €134.99 here in Dublin. So $150-ish sounds about reasonable. So they are Bluetooth. And they also have, you can answer calls on them. Mm-hmm. I don't see a microphone. Maybe it picks it up from bone conduction as well. That's possible. But whatever way it does it, you can take calls. And it has a little phone button on the earpiece that doesn't go over your ear. So that's handy. So you can take a call without having to get your phone out. The battery pack is, so basically they're very, very solid. It's like a battery pack that rests on your neck. And then these two very chunky arms, and then they go over your ear and on. Now, you have to take a bit of time to adjust this so that everything sits comfortably, but when you have, it doesn't move. So I don't jog, but I did a little jog for you, Alison, to test.
Oh, did you?
I did. You asked me to, so I did. Uh-huh. And assuming you have taken the time to adjust everything so it sits correctly on your shape of head, they don't move. They stay where they are.
Effectively, I like the idea of you wearing those better cycling because your ears aren't covered up.
Yeah, absolutely. That is such a big deal. So even if they weren't good in other ways, I'd still want them for that anyway. But I have found that it's not a compromise. They work. So they stay put, assuming you take the time to adjust them, which you should. The battery has surprised me. I sort of would have expected this to be a, you know, everyday new thing to do when I come home from cycling, charge headphones. I haven't charged these more than once a week, and I have never had the battery less than halfway empty when I did.
Wow. It's got that pretty big battery in the back.
I guess that's the magic of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's many milliamps or whatever goes into a battery, so that obviously works. They charge over USB, which is very handy as well, because everyone has USBs lying around.
Yeah, I think most of them do these days. I'm wondering why you wouldn't have looked into the incredibly inexpensive ones that I use, the Beena headphones. People have been, by the way, a lot of people have bought those on my affiliate link. Thank you, everyone who has. I keep seeing them pop up. I mean, they're like $18. So what if you get them wrecked? You know, buy another one, $18. But battery life, probably my biggest complaint about those is it'll say battery low, and about 30 seconds later, you're done. No warning. Now, Steve swears by the Jabras, and they give him, he gets quite a lot of time. I mean, you know, a half hour, an hour, or something more out of it after it gives the first warning. So, on the Beenas, it's like, go, gone. So that's kind of
I don't even know what these do when they get low. Because it hasn't happened that far.
Nice.
The other thing is the battery indicator shows up on your iPhone. So next to your battery for the iPhone, there's a Bluetooth icon with a battery next to it as well. So you can watch them from your iPhone, which is really nice.
Really? Wait, where are you seeing
that?
And
on iOS 9.
Where do you see that?
I only see it when they're turned on and paired. And so where your battery indicator is, where the Bluetooth, you know the Bluetooth icon if you have Bluetooth on?
Where are you? Are you?
Top right of the iPhone in the menu bar thing. So where the clock is on your iPhone.
Okay, it's not a menu bar. It's just a list of stuff you can't do anything with.
Yeah, it's where the menu bar is on the Mac, so I call it that. I'm not sure what we call it.
But okay, the status bar, maybe.
Yeah, so you know the way you have a Bluetooth icon that's like the little B with the funny shape? Well, right next to that, the same height as that, vertically next to it, comes a little battery symbol. And as the battery goes down, the little battery symbol goes down. So it just sneaks in next to the Bluetooth icon. Very thin, very
can't
small.
Be something that Damson did separately. I wonder if we all have that and haven't noticed it.
There's an API that can be used by Bluetooth devices if they choose to.
Ah, okay. Okay. I'll have to check. I've never looked.
And what I noticed really this morning on iOS 9, if you swipe down, there's a new thingy in the swipey down thing. I'm being very descriptive today. do you call that?
In the today widget?
Yeah.
That you can see battery?
All the batteries of all your Bluetooth. So I swiped down and it showed Apple Watch 72%, Damson headphones 80-odd%.
Oh, wow. I have seen that I can see my watch and my iPhone. I wonder if my $17 headphones can do that. That would be swell.
Again, I assume it's down to whether or not they implement the API.
Yeah, I'm guessing they might not have, but I'll go check it. I wish I had them handy to check.
Yeah. So that all worked out very good. The sound quality seems absolutely fine to me. Now, I don't use them for music. I just want to listen to stuff while I'm out cycling, so I don't know how they'll hold up for music. I get the impression, because it's bone conduction, they transmit deep sounds better than high sounds.
Mm-hmm.
So I notice it when I'm listening to podcasts. If I'm listening to a female podcaster, I have to turn the volume up a click. And when it changes over to... Actually, no, Neil deGrasse Tyson may be somewhat the exception. But when I turn it over to Neil deGrasse Tyson, it's down two clicks.
Mm-hmm.
Because Neil is very deep. So there is certainly that aspect to it. And the other thing is, if the volume gets high, it is bone conduction, so it's always vibrating, but you generally don't notice a vibration. It's just magic. But if the sound is really bassy, you can feel it vibrating, which is weird. It's not painful. It's just weird. Odd.
Just I guess odd. You get used to it.
You do, because the first day I was like, it's fine now. But, you know, I like to keep the volume not too high anyway.
I wonder how these would work with someone with hearing impairments.
I don't know.
Because if it's bone conduction, it still has to end up vibrating. Does it still have to vibrate the little hairs in your ears that are in charge of sound? I wonder.
Yes, it does. Yep.
I'll have to ask my buddy Niraj what he thinks about that.
I'd be very curious, actually. Because maybe depending on what kind of hearing loss you have, maybe it may or may not bypass some issues. I don't know.
I've also always wondered, if you're wearing a hearing aid, how do you wear headphones on a hearing aid? You know, how does that end up working out? But maybe something like this, you could do both.
Yeah, because it sits... So if you imagine where your ear is, it sits in front of your ear. So there's two little pads. So instead of it being earphones that go on or in your ear, they're just two flat pads, and they sit in front of your ear.
Yeah.
Just sort of on your cheekbone.
If anybody is hearing impaired and has an opinion on this, I would like to hear it. Of course, I'm saying that in audio for somebody who's probably just reading the text, but good for me. Anyway, I would be interested if anybody knows the answer to that. But I will send this off to my buddy Niraj and ask him, because he would have an opinion.
Excellent. In terms of things that are... Actually, the one more thing I really like, it comes with a hard case that's like properly hard, and the charger and the headphones fit in the case, and it has one of those little clips like you have in climbing equipment, so you can just snap it to a backpack.
Hmm. So they look kind of big, like you're going to have a big case.
It's a chunky, like a sunglasses case.
I can wad my $17 ones up into the size of a quarter. Actually, not a quarter.
Yeah, no, not these.
A dollar.
They're chunky, but that's kind of a good thing because I've broken so many now. Chunky, good. One thing that confused me. So there are volume buttons built into the back of the battery pack, which you can. They're actually quite chunky, so you can feel them by just reaching around. Those are hardware buttons. They're not affecting the volume on the iPhone. They're affecting the volume of the headphones at a hardware level.
Oh.
So if you turn those down, you can't turn the sound up from your iPhone.
Hmm.
So my approach is I have the ones in the back of the headphone set near the top, not quite at full power. That's just too much power. I have like three clicks down from full, and then I use my iPhone to regulate everything.
Well, that's a pain.
It's a bit weird because like the little call button uses the correct APIs to talk straight to the iPhone. Why don't the volume buttons?
Yeah.
So that one weirded me out. I don't understand that.
Because I like to be able to, while I'm running and, you know, turn it up and down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
I guess you can, as long as, I guess if you always put the iPhone at a certain volume, you could regulate with the headphones. I guess it's up to you to decide which way you're going to set it up. But just be aware they are hardware buttons.
And I do like that the watch lets you change volume, but it's like 11 taps to get to the volume controls. If I'm running and I've got the workout running, it's going to be telling me, God, I hope I finished my workout. Did I? I forget to shut off the workout.
Now with watchOS 2, the little running man really helps me not forget that.
Oh.
Have you not noticed that? If you're doing a workout, you know the way where the little evil red icon comes when your iPhone is at a range?
Yeah.
If you're doing a workout, there's a little man in that place.
Is there?
There is, as of watchOS 2.
Oh, cool.
So
yeah.
If you forget to stop your workout, the little running man is there to remind you to stop that.
I didn't know that. That's awesome, because I forget all the time.
Me too. I usually discover the next time. I've been cycling for 14 hours. Good for me.
Why is my phone battery dead? I don't know. Let me see. You're saying on the main screen, if I'm looking at the clock, I should see a little running man. Nope.
Yeah, so just above the just where in that top bit where the red X goes when
maybe
the phone is at range.
Oh, okay. I had Do Not Disturb on because I was recording a podcast. And so there's only one place for that. So if you have DND on, you won't see it. But you're right. There's a little running man. Look at that.
Isn't that cool?
That is sweet. Because I'm a moron and I forget it all the time.
There you go. So in terms of not so good things, so the hardware buttons are a bit weird. The vibration can be a bit odd if the sound is very bassy. And the other thing I will say is you really do need to take care to get these adjusted, because if you don't adjust them properly, they will become uncomfortable after like 10 or 15 minutes.
Okay.
And even if you do, after 2 hours, I'm generally happy to take them off.
Really?
But actually, I did a test last weekend. So I've had these. I was very careful not to do this review quickly. So I've had the armband and these headphones for about 2 months now. And I wanted to make sure I actually liked them before I reviewed them. And last weekend, in preparation, I used my old headphones again, the pair I hadn't broken. And I would never go back to them again.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. That's good. One last question. Which side is the receiver on, the right or the left? Do you know? Because that changes which side you have to have the armband on, usually.
I have a feeling the receiver is probably in the bit at the back. It seems fine with me either way.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I've had a world of hurt with trying to get Bluetooth headphones to stay connected. I'm hoping Steve's new iPhone 6S has worse Bluetooth, because he had like super Bluetooth on his iPhone 5. Like, he'd walk in the house and every Bluetooth speaker in the house would stop functioning. We'd be sitting, his phone could be upstairs and we couldn't use the Jawbone downstairs until he went up and got his phone and turned it off. Turned off Bluetooth.
Well, these things seem to have magic range, because yesterday I was getting onto the bike ready to go. I had the headphones on. I was listening to a podcast. The phone was lying next to me somewhere. It wasn't in my armband yet. It was lying next to the front door. I forgot something. I went upstairs without the phone to my room, messed around, got some stuff, and walked back down. And only when I got back down the stairs did I realize that I didn't have my phone with me, and it never dropped.
Wow. Yeah, that's quite a ways. That's amazing.
So, I don't know. I didn't know Bluetooth could do that.
Yeah. I can have my phone on top of my car, and if I lean down to, say, clean the tires, I lose Bluetooth connection. No, that's through a giant metal object, but still. Maybe 8 or 10 feet on those.
One other thing that's kind of interesting, I don't know if it's no use to me, but maybe someone else will find it interesting. There's actually an auxiliary in and auxiliary out port. So you can use this to turn any headphones into Bluetooth headphones by plugging them into the auxiliary ports.
Wait, say that one more time.
So there's a speaker plug in the big battery pack at the back. So you could take ordinary headphones and plug them into the battery pack and they become Bluetooth headphones.
Then you'd have two sets of headphones on your head?
Well, I presume that the little vibratory bits wouldn't be working if you go in auxiliary mode.
No,
so
but
they're
you'd
just
be
sitting
carrying
in front
them
of your
both.
Ear.
You'd have.
Yeah, I know.
That would
it's
be
weird.
Dumb. I bet it's not. It's to make a regular speaker be a Bluetooth speaker, not
well,
headphones.
They actually ship with little in-ear earpieces. They come with the heads with these headphones that have a really, really short cable, so they fit perfectly into the auxiliary. So when you get these headphones, there will be three things in the box. The headphones, the USB cable, and a set of in-ear headphones with a teeny tiny cable on them that's so short that it's designed to just go into this auxiliary port and turn these into ordinary headphones.
That's weird.
I took those.
Oh, yeah, it says on the Amazon link, it says turns any 3.5 millimeter headphones into wireless headphones. Why on earth you would want to do that makes no sense to me.
And I've also seen there's an auxiliary in as well, so you could make it into a wireless mic.
Okay. All right. Well, we've probably spent enough time on headphones and the armband, but it sounds like it's a great solution for you. That's awesome. And, you know, I'm making fun of you for not buying the cheap ones, but I have this tendency to buy 11 sets of the cheap thing instead of just buying one good pair of something. So
I sometimes do that, and then I get cranky, and then I go the opposite way, and I buy one really expensive thing, and I hope it lasts a long time. It's the fact that it doesn't cover my ears, to be honest, is the big selling point. That is the real reason I went with this above the recommendations. Like, actually, it was either this or the one you have, which is kind of an extreme, but I decided I'll be safe.
There you go. Yeah, that's a much better idea. I'd like you to not get run over by a car. Well, I think we're actually going to have you 2 weeks in a row, right? We're going to see you again next week.
That is the plan, which means we should have a short security segment, and then we're going to do some nerdery. I haven't decided what nerding we're going to do, but it'll be nerdy.
All right. All right. Sounds good, Bart. We'll talk to you again next week then.
Okie dokie. Until then, happy computing.
Well, that's going to wind us up for this week. Many thanks to our sponsor for helping to pay the bills, the makers of Clarify over at clarify-it.com. Don't forget to send in your dumb questions like Lynn York did this week. And we haven't answered it yet, but she did send in a question. Send in those questions, comments, and suggestions. You can email me at allison@podfeet.com. Follow me on Twitter @podfeet and check out the NoSilcast Google Plus community. I get a lot of help over there. George from Tulsa's in there like a crazy man helping people, posting deals. A lot of great questions and answers and debates going on in our Google Plus community. So go check that out at podfeet.com/Google Plus. If you want to join in the front of the live show, head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time and join the friendly and enthusiastic NoSilla Castaways. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.